company's files had been erased. What would Kate Williams use? He tried her first name, then her last, then both together. No go. On a whim, he typed in Scarlet. The screen lit up, ready for his next command. I'll be damned, Dan muttered. Then he went to work. It took more than an hour for Dan to scroll through the basic information he wanted. Tucker fidgeted at the edge of his awareness, becoming more nervous each second. At one point, Dan told him to bring George from the closet. And relax, Dan said to the wizened old man. If they haven't come down on us by now, then they don't know we're here. The company records told him a story as bad as he had feared he would find. Worse in some ways. Astro was being micromanaged by bureaucrats from the GEC who had no understanding of how to run a working company. Production was faltering, while the GEC put major emphasis on paperwork. Every move had to be okayed by the new management. Filling out the proper forms had become more important than getting the job done. There were plans to vastly increase the company's production of helium-3, plans to double the production of solar panels, plans to triple the tonnage of silicon and aluminum shipped to the factories in orbit. Or rather, there were memorandums and reports and impact statements about such plans, plans to make plans, committees to study the proposed plans, other committees to study the committee's recommendations. Dan pushed his chair back from the desk with a disgusted snort. Christ, what a putrefying mess. At this rate, the whole damned world could be underwater, and the only way anybody'll be saved is if they stack their double-damned reports on top of one another and climb up to the top of the pile.
It's almost midnight, Tucker whispered hoarsely. How long?
I'm just about finished, said Dan. Here, make me an access that nobody else can find. I want complete access to all the files in the system. The dour little man perched on Dan's chair, his frail legs dangling off the floor, his fingers flying over the keyboard like a concert pianist's. Big George sprawled dozing on one of the couches across the office. It took more than 10 seconds. Nearly 10 minutes. Finally, Tucker gestured to the glowing screen.
It's done. You can pop into the system any time you want. What code name do you want?
Dan thought a moment. Freedom. Tucker hiked his brows, but tapped in the word.
Now we can go?
He asked sourly, shutting down the computer. Wait, said Dan, one more thing. He went back to the desk, booted up the machine again, and using Freedom, asked the system to locate Tamara Duchamp. The screen showed that she had been assigned to the transportation department. Her job title was secretary to the manager of freight exports. Got her stuck out at the mass driver, Dan realized, as far away from comfort and safety as they could put her. He shook his head. Kate's a real bitch, he thought. But then he brightened. It ought to be a lot easier for me to see Tamara out there at the Nubium facility than it would be if she were still here inside Alphonsus.
For God's sake, Tucker hissed at him. Let's get out of here.
Relax, Dan said. This is the safest place in the city for us right now.
Then why does my stomach feel like there's 10,000 frogs jumping around in there?
Dan crossed the thick carpeting and entered the lavatory. The cabinet drawers under the sink were filled with Kate's things now. Perfumes and cosmetics and even some skimpy, frilly underwear that made Dan grin appreciatively. So that's what she wears underneath it all, he muttered. No pills, not even aspirin. He was about to give up when he finally discovered his shaving things crammed into the back of the bottom drawer. Even the barber's scissors and electric razor were jumbled in there. Greatest luxury in the world, Dan remembered, is having somebody else shave you. Shaking his head at the memory of a particularly gorgeous Swede who took her tonsorial duties seriously even while topless, Dan started the onerous chore of chopping off his beard. Tucker was fidgeting nervously when he came out clean-shaven. George was still snoring on the couch.
How do I look? Great. Now, let's get out of here.
Eyeing the shaggy Aussie, Dan said, might be a good idea if we cleaned him up, too. Tucker looked as if he were about to have apoplexy. Mohammed Sharif Sibuti rose from his knees and carefully rolled up his prayer rug. He kept his office locked during the times of prayer, even though his staff were all faithful to Islam, he did not want unbelievers such as Malik, or worse, the Catholic Gaetano, to intrude on his prayers. God knows that we will need all the help and strength that only he can provide, Sibuti said to himself as he carefully placed the tasseled rug into the cabinet behind his desk. And all the patience, too, he added as he sat in his desk chair once again. He touched the button that unlocked his door, then with the same long, slim finger activated his phone. I will see Minister Malik now, he said, noticing that his finger was trembling. It had been nearly 2 months since Malik had dropped his bombshell about the greenhouse cliff, yet Sibuti still felt stunned, shocked. Slowly, carefully, the word was being passed on to leaders in the various national governments and multinational corporations. Sibuti imagined he could see the shockwaves spreading from Paris to the capitals of nations and the seats of the great industrial empires. Minister Malik is here, sir, said his secretary's voice over the phone. Send him in. Malik had not changed a whit over the past weeks. Sibuti felt as if he himself had aged a century, but Malik looked as youthful and determined as ever, dashing even in his military-style tunic of deep blue. Sibuti felt very old in his ordinary gray business suit.
You wanted to see me? The Russian asked, taking one of the chairs in front of Sibuti's desk without waiting to be invited.
The older man nodded, pressing his lips together.
Yes. I am beginning to prepare the agenda for next week's council meeting. I think it is time that we began to discuss how we will break the news of this impending catastrophe to the general public.
Malik's ice-blue eyes flickered briefly.
It is too early to inform the public at large.
Too early? But the rumors are already beginning to spread.
The media can be controlled, and the rumors always spread. What of it?
Rumors can be very damaging, very dangerous, said Sibuti. Malik shot him a glance filled with scorn.
Nothing but hot air.
You think so? Let me tell you, sir, that rumors can be deadly. Do you understand me? Deadly. When I was first appointed to the council, every year the mighty rivers of Bangladesh overflowed and killed thousands on the coastal plains. Then we began to build the big hydro dams up in the mountains.
And controlled the flooding, Malik interrupted, and provided the electricity that has brought the standard of living in the region up by several 100%.
Yes, true. But the year that the third dam was being finished, do you remember that? A rumor began to spread in the coastal cities that the dams had failed. The rumor spread like wildfire.
Malik leaned forward, interested in the older man's story despite himself.
Anyone with a television could see that the dams were perfectly all right, Sibuti went on, his thin voice rising. But the people did not trust reports by the news media. They did not even trust the evidence of their own eyes. They reacted to the rumor. They fled in terror from the cities in a mad dash to get to higher ground. They emptied the stores, looted what they could not buy, burned what they could not carry off with them, killed one another on the roads.
Somewhat subdued, Malik said, I do remember something of that.
The cities were abandoned in panic. Thousands were killed. By panic. By a rumor. The national economy was crippled for several years before things settled down to normal once again. That is what rumors can do.
Malik spread his hands. But my dear minister, your own story proves how hard we must work to avoid panic. Imagine what would happen if we suddenly announced that half the world might be flooded out in the next 10 years. It would be like Bangladesh everywhere.
Sibuti glared at the Russian. But his expression slowly softened as Malik's point sank in.
Yes, I see. I understand. We are on the horns of a dilemma, a very painful dilemma.
We are making progress, Malik said. The politicians whom we have informed are dithering and flapping around like a pack of geese as usual, but the corporate leaders seem to be facing the situation much more realistically.
I see where the Americans have renewed their request to develop hydrogen-fueled automobiles.
Malik frowned. We must resist that.